Well, now we've all dissolved into the night of sleep. And that's Finnegan. And the world dreamer is dreaming through us all. And so the perspective is that of sleep, dream consciousness. When one listens to Hindu music, Indian music, it never has a beginning and it never has an end. You know, it's down there all the time. And the consciousness of the musician with the instrument dips into that area and picks it up and then leaves it again. And that's the way Finnegan's Wake is. The same thing is going on, ever the same, yet changing ever. And these are the two levels of dream, the peculiar historical moment associated with this, that, or another person, and then the archetypal process. Now, the book itself is in four parts. And this division into four parts is based on the idea of the cycle of the myth, the age of gold, silver, bronze, iron. But specifically, Joyce takes the idea from Giambattista Vico. And Battista Vico was a 17th and 18th century Italian philosopher who wrote a work called The New Science, in which he suggested that the first speech of man was gesture language. And Joyce's hero is sometimes spoken of as the one who uses gestures rather than speech. When he does use speech, he stutters. So when he gestures, he stutters also. And he's called Big Master Finnegan of the Stuttering Hand. Freeman's Maurer, the Freemason, the great master builder of Ibsen is involved in this, and the ideas and so forth and so on. Vico's story of the cycle of time is of a period when men were simply animals, everyone fighting for advantage over the others. And this is the period of the battling giants. And then his notion is that the voice of the thunder was recognized as the voice of God, threatening and disciplining mankind. And those who in the thunder heard the voice of God settled down and lived decent lives. They began agriculture. And with their property and agriculture and the energy they put into it, they gained wealth. And so their sons inherit the wealth, and they also inherit the knowledge that God has spoken to their fathers. So we now have three ages so far: the age of the battling giants, the voice of the thunder, and following that, the age of the fathers, those who establish a civilization, the age of the sons, who inherit the civilization. Now, the people outside who'd never heard the voice of God, they do see that there's some advantage in being in this civilization. So they want in. And they're accepted with the understanding that they'll work. So this is the slave or servant community. But at a certain period, they begin to say, well, why should these people have all the money and property and we not have any? I think we recognize this motif. And so we have what's called the age of the people. Well, in the age of the people, nobody has heard the word of God. And what are the people interested? Just goods again and property. So we're back to the age of the battling giants. And the cycle starts over and over and over. Though that age of the giants is called the ricorso, the return. The age of the fathers, the sons, the people, and the ricorso. Those are the four books of Finnegan. course, the one who is dreaming is living in our day. Now, the first book takes us back into the past. We can become archaeologists digging in the ground and finding signs of the old time. The second book has to do with here and now, and we're actually in the tavern of HCE. The third book, as daylight begins to come, is where the dream thins out and we have the father's hopes for his son, what he foresees his future. And then daylight comes and the dream dissolves, and we're ready then for the next night. So the book itself is written in a circle. And you realize this when you open the first page and see that it starts with a small letter. And the beginning sentence is at the end of the book, away, a last, a loved, alone, along the river run past even Adams. Now, if you have read the book and come to the end and don't want to read it again, then you are released. You're in heaven. You're out. But if certain things about what you read interest you, you'll come back. See? So that break, you know, when you see images of the Buddha in the teaching posture, the round of rebirth, the hand points to the break. You can go out, but you probably won't. You'll be back to go round and round again. Now, the circle is the river of time. It's the flow of the river of time. And this river is represented in the book by the River Liffey, which is the river that flows through Dublin. It flows through Dublin out to the sea. And the water of the ocean is heated by the sun, and evaporation sends clouds up to heaven. And these clouds form in the sky there, as though in the womb of Mother Universe, and they come over the little hill area south of Dublin called Glendalough, and there the rain falls. And in Glendalough, we have a lot of little streams, little rivers, which then unite into one stream. And this stream then flows eastward, flows westward for a certain way as a young dancing girl. The river is Anna Livia Plurabelle. It's called the River Liffey, and her name is Anna Livia. Anna Livia Plurabelle. The river flows westward, then turns north through the suburb country. And at that stage, she is a young matron with a family, suburban decency. And then the river turns eastward, flows through Dublin, taking all the filth and dirt of the city off back into the sea. And you have an old scrub woman now. And back into the sea, the water is then lifted up to the sky, drifts down to Glendalough, and that's the cycle. So the river run goes round and round. Anna Livia Plurabelle. It flows past Dublin and out into the sea. Now, when it flows into the sea past Dublin, just to the north is a headland that comes out, the Hill of Howth. The word Howth means head. So this is thought of as the head of a giant. And if that's the head of the giant, then Dublin is the belly of the giant. And the toes and feet and toes of the giant turn up in Phoenix Park. So you think of the great sleeping giant in the landscape, and you think of the river flowing by his consort, his wife, Anna Livia Pleuro. Sleeping giant is Finn. Now, again, in India, the notion is that energy and movement is female. The idea Shakti, female. The male is just asleep. Let me alone. I just want to be alone, quiet. And this twinkle female goes past and whispers to him of such and such and so and so. And wouldn't it be nice to start the world again? And he thinks, yes, it would. And so he is activated. And this river flowing past, rippling along, is activating the imagination of the sleeping giant. Now, this sleeping giant can be compared to the sleeping Vishnu, do you see? And from Vishnu's navel grows the dream in the form of a lotus. The lotus is Padma, a goddess. Lakshmi Padma, the goddess, lotus, and good fortune. But when you see the pictures, sculptures of Vishnu sleeping, dreaming with the lotus, his wife, Lakshmi, is at his feet, massaging his feet. She's also the lotus. She's in two roles. One, massaging the feet, which is irritating him a little bit. Just, here I am, dear. And he thinks about her, and then you have the dream. So this irritating moment is going to be through the story. And I'll just read the first page to let you hear how this book sounds. And I'll spend a little while telling you what you've heard. The river runs past a little church called Adam and Eve's. Well, that's our first parents. And then it comes to the shore, and there's the swerve of shore and the bend of the bay. The shore is Ireland. The bay is the attacking water, the Irish and the invaders. The word bay, two or three times, is spelled B-E-Y, which means a Turkish warrior or ruler or diplomat. The bend of bay is the bowing of the bay as the waters go broke on the beach. And then the swerve of shore is the temptress invoking him. So she brings it on herself. River run past even Adams from swerve of shore to bend of bay brings us by a commodious vicus of recirculation back to Hoth Castle and environs. Sir Tristram Violer d'Amores had passancore re-arrived from North Armorica, this side the scraggy isthmus of Europe Minor, to wield a fight his peninsulate war. Nor had Topsawyer's rocks by the stream O'Coney exaggerated themselves to Lawrence County's gorgios, while they went doubling their mumper all the time. Nor a voice from a fire below said, Misha, Misha, to Tauf Tauf, Duat Petrick. Not yet the Venice soon after had a kid's cad, but ended a bland old Isaac. Not yet, though all's fair in vanity, were saucy Cestus wroth with Twon Nath and Joe. Rotterpeck of Pa's malt had Jemershen brewed by Arclight, and Rory and two, the Regan brow was to be seen, rings them on the water face. The fall. Baba Badal Harag to Kamina run con brun ton a run twan thun, drove our horn on scorn to hoo hoo did at the nook of a once wall straight old par, is retailed early in bed and later on life down to all Christian minstrelsy. The great fall of the off wall entailed at such short notice the shoot of Finnegan, earth solid man, that the Humpty Hillhead of himself promptly sends an inquiring one well to the west in quest of his Tumpty Tumptoes. And their upturned pike point and place is at the knock out in the park where oranges have been laid to rust upon the green since Devlin's first loved Libby. Now, that's about 625 pages of that time. The oranges, the orangemen and the green. The orangemen are the invaders, the Protestants and so forth that come in to rust or rest upon the green, but they disintegrate into the green and become Irish. And they're fertilizers, more or less, but it's a little bit of anguish in the interval. River run past even Adams. The river comes past even Adams. Swerve of shore, bend of bay, brings us by a commodious vicus, vico, the philosopher, round and round and round, a commodious vicus, a wide road, back to Hoth Castle and environs, capital letters, H-C-E. Now, the Hoth head has a castle on it. That's Hoth Castle. And it's as though it were a crown on the head of the sleeping giant. That castle goes back to the time of Henry II, who conquered Ireland in the 12th century. And he brought with him, in his company, a chap named Sir Tristram Almeric, who is supposed to have been the founder of that castle. Well, the word Tristan is not only historically interesting, but it refers immediately to Tristan and Isolde. And the town where the tavern is, just outside of Dublin, is Chapel Isolde. So we have the story of Tristan and Isolde on our minds. Now, Tristan was born in Brittany, and the medieval name for Brittany was Armorica. So the river run has brought us back to Hoth Castle and Vines. It's as though, by the way, this is an important matter in the book, it's as though we were on a tour. And the person, and this is the Blue Book of Ireland, you know, telling you, we follow the tour, and now the river, following the river run, we've come back to Hoth Castle and environs. Coming back there in time, we're starting the round again. And those things which are going to happen haven't yet happened. But they did happen in the earlier round. And so this paragraph is one that is saying it hasn't happened. It has happened. Just listen. Sir Tristram, violer d'amores, the violator of love, the violin player of love, from over the short sea, the Irish Sea, had passant cor re-arrived, had re-arrived, passing again, pass encore, but passant cor means had not yet re-arrived. He had, he hadn't. From North Armorica, that's Brittany, but it suggests North America. On this side, the scraggy isthmus of Europe Minor, as though Europe were simply an isthmus of Asia, just as our consciousness and individual consciousness is but an isthmus of the great impersonal of unconscious, which is so well represented in the Asian mythological material. To wielder fight his peninsula at war. Now, there are two sons of the hero, and Tristan may be one or the other. The pen, isolate war. With the pen, you are isolated. You're in your room writing, and you're spending all your time writing. But the penis solate war is the son who is not a writer, but the successful guy out there. This is, of course, Joyce and Mulligan again, Stephen and Buck Mulligan. But the Peninsulate War was the war in which Napoleon and Wellington were involved, and Wellington was from Dublin, and so forth and so on. So we've got a historical thing, and see how tight all this is. Now we've said North America, so we begin to think of North America, and there is a Finn in North America, namely Huckleberry Finn. Tristan's uncle was Mark, and so there's a Mark in America too, Mark Twain, who is the author of Huckleberry Finn. So we have Mark Twain, who also wrote Tom Sawyer. And this brings us then to, nor had Top Sawyer's rocks by the stream Oconee exaggerated themselves to Lawrence County's gorgios, while they were doubling their mumper all the time. Now, in Georgia, There is a county called Lawrence County. The family that now owns, or did own, the Hoth Castle is the Lawrence family. And Lawrence was the name of the bishop at the time of the conquest by Henry II. Lawrence County's gorgeous, but Gorgios are gorgeous guys. Lawrence County, the capital of Lawrence County, curiously enough, is named Dublin. And it's on a stream, the name of which is Oconee. And Oconee in Irish means alas. Tom Sawyer instead of Tom Sawyer. When a tree is cut down, a tree stem, the lumberjacks then cut it up. And they have these big double-handled swords. And one stands on top of the log, these great big trees, and another is down in the pit. And one is the top sawyer, and the other is the pit sawyer. And the one in the pit, of course, gets all the sawdust in his eyes, so the top sawyer is the winner again. Top sawyer's rocks exaggerated themselves. Rocks is money, he gets rich. But rocks also suggest the testicles, and so they exaggerate themselves also by producing progeny. So he gets rich, and he has a family in America. Nor had Top Sawyer's rocks by the stream Oconee exaggerated themselves to Lawrence County's Gorgios, while they went Dublin, their mumper all the time. Now, mum is a champagne that was invented in 1492. So, America has come into the story. Nor a voice from a fire below said, Misha, Misha, to Tauf, Tauf, throughout Petrick. Now, Petrick is Ireland. Ireland is a peat rick. And peat is the soil of Ireland, which is used for firewood. St. Patrick, when he wanted to convert Ireland, just drew a circle, and the ground opened up, and there was hell. This is called St. Patrick's Purgatory. And there was the fire of hell, which put the fear of God into you. But the last time we heard about fire, God in the fire, was the burning bush. So underneath it says, Misha, Misha, you know, Moses, Moses. But if you ever pick up the telephone in Japan, what you'll hear will be moshi, moshi. This means hello, hello. So we got that. Not yet, though. Venice soon after had a kid's cad, but ended a bland old Isaac. Now, Isaac, we know, was cheated by Jacob, who put himself into the kid's skin, the goat skin, to make his hands and arms seem hairy, that made him seem to be Esau, and so he attained the birthright by cheating Isaac. But Isaac Butt was one of the Irish revolutionaries, too. So good deals coming in here. Not yet, though. Venice soon after. The Venice soon is, of course, the meat of the kid, which becomes cooked, and Isaac eats it. Not yet, the Venice soon after had a kid's cad, the younger brother of the goat man, Esau, but ended, Isaac but, a bland old Isaac. Not yet, though, all's fair in Vanity, where saucy sisters wroth with throne Nath and Joe. Now, Esther, you know, Jonathan Swift, and Esther and Vanessa, not yet, though, Venice soon after. Nath and Joe is Jonathan turned upside down, tipsy-turvy, by two young girls. He was, of course, in Dublin. He was the bishop of the cathedral in Dublin, and fell in love with these two girls. Rata Pekapaz Mal Hegemeshen Bru Bayaklai. Well, you know, after the flood, Noah got drunk. And his sons saw him lying exposed and drunk. Shem, Japheth, and Ham. And Joyce has combined them so that Jem and Shem combine the three names, because in Joyce, in this work, there's going to be only two sons. But the Shem is the one who is outlawed, but is really the top. Shem, the Semites, the saying was, Japheth shall live in the tents of Shem, and Ham shall be his servant. So Joyce has combined these. By arc light, after the flood, there was the rainbow. And when you see a rainbow over water, it might be reflected in the water so that you get the total circle. And Rorientu, the Regenbrow, is to be seen, rings him on the aquaface. Rorientu, Rory O'Connor was the king of Ireland at the time of the conquest by Henry II. And Henry II is the Regenbrow, the king's brow, that is to be seen reflected in the water of the rainbow and so forth and so on. Well, now that's that paragraph. And the whole book is this way. Now, the next thing is, I've told you about Finnegan falling from the ladder. Joyce makes the sound of his fall from the ladder into the voice of thunder. His fall is the thunder voice. Ba 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 dal harak de kamina ron con bron ton ron tuan tun trova hon on scon tu hu 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 din et duk. That's he going down the ladder. Every one of those syllables is from the word for thunder in one language or another. There are 101 letters in that word. Of a once wall straight old par. Well, it's a Wall Street crash, you know, the 1929 crash. But there was an old man, I think he lived to be 125 years old, in the 17th century, named Old Parr. So the fall of Old Parr, or of a Wall Street Old Parr, is retailed early in bed and later on life down through all Christian minstrelsy, retold. The great fall of the off wall entailed, that's a short notice, the shoot of Finnegan, Earth's solid man, and he becomes Humpty Dumpty who has fallen. So that the Humpty Hill heard of himself, that's Hoth, promptly sends an inquiring one well to the west in quest of his Tumpty Tumptoes. And their upturned pike point in that place is at the Knock, Castle Knock, out in the park where oranges have been laid to rust upon the green since Devlin's first loved Libby. Well, now, this is the fall of Finnegan. This is now, he will melt into the countryside. So the first part begins with the wake over Finnegan when he's taken home to be waked. And there's a pun on that, of course. And he is identified with great old builders of the past, those responsible for the great megalithic monuments throughout Ireland and throughout Europe. I'm going to take the third paragraph now, the one on page 4. A great builder he was. Big Mr. Finnegan of the Stuttering Hand, freeman's Maurer, lived in the broadest way imaginable in his rush lit. Too far back for messages. A messwage is not just a message. A messwage is a great estate. It's a big estate. We didn't have estates in that time. The voice of thunder hadn't been heard yet. Before Joshua and Judges had given us Numbers or Helvetica's committed Deuteronomy. One yeasty day, he sternly struck his tate in a tub for to watch the future of his fates. But ere he swiftly stuck it out again by the might of Moses, the very water was evaporated, and all the Guinnesses had met their exodus. So that ought to show you what a penchantucci chap he was. And during mighty odd years, this man of hod, cement, and edifices, HCE, in Toper's Thorpe, piled bildung super bildung upon the banks for the livers of the sowing soul. He added little Fifi Annie, A-L-P. Ugged the little creature. With her hair in hands, take up your partner. Oft wild boundbillus mitre ahead with goodly troweling grasp and ivor-oiled overalls, which he had particularly fancied, like Haroon Childeric Egeberth, H-C-E, he would caligulate by multiplicables the altitude and multitude, until he seesaw by neat light of the liquor wherein Twint was born, his round head staple of other days to rise in undress masonry, upstanded, joy granted, a wall worth of a sky escape of most eiffel, hoith, and towerly, originating from next to nothing and celestialating the hymnals and all. Higher architect, tippity-top loftical, with a burning bush above off its bauble top, and with larynx or tulas clittering up and tumbles of buckets clattering down. Now, this is the building of the British Empire. With the conquest of Ireland by Henry II, with larynx or tulas clittering up, the bishop, Lawrence O'Toole, became elevated following the conquest, and Thomas of Becket's cluttering down, Thomas of Becket was murdered. So that's what we got there. Then his heraldic insignia. Of the first was he to bear arms and a name, Wassaeli Booslich of Riesengeborg. His crest of heraldry invert with ancillas, trublant, argent, a he-goat, pursuivant, horrid, horned. This is heraldic language. His scutcheon fest with arches strung, Helio of the second. Hooch is for husbandman handling his hoe. Ho, 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 Muster Finn, you're going to be Mr. Finnegan. Come day morn and oh your vine. Send day's eve and ah your vinegar. Ha, 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 Mr. Fun, you're going to be fined again. Now, what happened in the park? What is all this talk about sin? What did Adam and Eve do? What did HCE do? What did Nixon do? What then agent-like brought about this tragedy, Thunder's Day, this municipal sin business? Our cube house still rocks as ear witness to the thunder of his Arafatas. But we hear also through successive ages that shebby koroish of uncalified muslin and mizzle hymns that would blackguardize the whitest one ever hurtled turtled out of heaven. Stay us wherefore in our search for righteousness, O sustainer, what time we rise and when we take up the toothmick, and before we lump down upon our leather bed, and in the night, and at the fading of the stars. I'm going to skip. She has a gift of seek on sight. And she all casually answers, help us, the dreamy dearie. Heed, heed. It may have been a misfired brick, as some say, or it might have been due to a collapsus of his back promises, as others looked at it. There extend by now 1,001 stories, all told of the same. I'm going to skip. One warning filled tippling full, his hoed filled heavy, his heart it did shake. There was a wall, of course, in erection. Dimp, he started from the latter. Damp, he was dud, dumb, mastabatum, mastabatum. When a man marries his loot is all along for whole of the world to see. So I've skipped some of the more clouded and difficult passages. He has fallen from the ladder. This is a rather interesting thing. When I was in Paris in 1927 and found Joyce, this book had of course not yet been published, but earlier versions of the text were being published in a journal published by Jolas, Eugene Jolas, called Transition, under the title Work in Progress. And the first sentence, which when you bought this book in 1938 read, River run past even Adams from Swerve Shore to Bender Bay brings us by commodious figures of recirculation back to Holt Castle and environs. In the original version, just said River run brings us back to Holt Castle and environs. And so Joyce has loaded this with more and more stuff. And in some of my readings, I went through this whole thing comparing it with the original, with that earlier version, and I've cut out some of the more complicated later insertions, because they only add themes that belong in the back of the book, which you don't know about until you've read it over. And my intention is to make it so that you can grab this as rather simply. So now we have the wake, and this is a very telling little passage about the lively things that are going on at the wake. Shies, I should she, McCool, McCool, or a why did you dee of a trying thirsty morning. Sobs they sided at Philigan's Chris or Miss Wake, All the hooligans of the nation, prostrated in their consternation and their duodecimally profusive plethora of ululation. Whenever you get the Asian, you're getting the 12 good citizens that are going to be sitting in judgment, like our senators on our friend. There was plums and grooms and sheriffs and citherers and raiders and cinnamon too. And they all joined in with the shoutmost joviality, agog and magog and the round of the magog, to the continuation of that celebration until Hannon Hunnigan's extermination. Some in kin-kin chorus, more can-can-keening, belling him up and filling him down. He's stiff, but he's steady as Priam Olim. 'Twas he was the dacent gay laboring youth, sharpen his pillow scone, tap up his beer. Era, where in this world would you hear such a din again? With their deep-brow fundings and the dusty fidelios, they laid him broad dawn a langlass bed, with a bacalypse of finisky for his feet and a barrel load of Guinnesses for his head. Gee, the tootle of the fluid hang the twaddle of the fuddled o. Gradually now, he's going to disappear into the landscape so that he'll become the Dublin. Do you see what I mean? He's melting into the archetypes. Grandpuppus has fallen down, but Grinny spreads the board. His poor little widow is the one who has to put on the meal, get eaten out of house and home by this bunch of people, and she does very well. Whas on the joint of a dash, finfo from the fush. Whas be his bacon head, a loaf of St. Pantry's Kennedy bread, and Whas hitched to the hop of his tail, a glass of Dunno O'Donnell's famous old double and ale. But lo, as you would quaff off his fraud stuff and sink teeth through that pith of a flower white body, behold of him as behemoth, for he is nowhere more. Finish, only a photograph of a yestern scene, almost Rubicon Salmo Sala, ancient from out the ages of the Agapebonides. He is smolten in our midst, woe be canned and packed away. So that meal's dead off for someone, schluck, slice, and good rid hearing. Yet may we not still see the Bronto-Ichthyan form outlined a slumbered, even in our own nighttime, by the sedge of the troutling stream that Bronto loved and Bronto has a lean on. Hic cubat edilis apud libertinam parvulam. Now his little wife. Here he sleeps beside his wife's servant. What if she be in flags or flitters, reeky rags or Sunday showsies, with a mint of mines or beggar a pennyweight? Are I sure we all love little Annie Ruiny, or we mean to say, love little Anna Rayany, when under her umbrella, mid biddle, mid puddle, she ninny goes, nanny goes, dancing by. Now that's our couple. Sweet little affair. Well, one of the most famous sections here is this one known as the Muxa and the Gripes. And this is going to take a bit of doing. It's not easy. We're in a chapter now. This starts on page 152. A professor has taken over the problem of clearing it all up and telling us what this text means, what the story is all about. And he begins to feel that you are not understanding what he's saying. It's too complicated. And so he's going to make it kind of easy for you by telling you a little story. 152. As my explanations here are probably above your understandings, Lattle Brattons, though as argumentatively uncaparisoned as Cadwan, Cadwallon, and Cadwalloner, I shall revert to a more expletive method, which I frequently use when I have to sermo with muddled, crass pupils. Imagine for my purpose that you are a squad of urchins, sniffly-nosed, gosling-necked, clothy-headed, tangled in your lacings, tingled in your pants, etc., etc. And you, Bruno Nolan, take your tongue out of your inkpot. And none of you knows Javanese, I will give all my easy free translation of the old fabulous parable. Alleboy Minor, take your head out of your satchel. Audi, Joe Peters, ex-Audi, facts, the Muxa and the gripes. Now, the Muxer is the hero type, and what he is the Roman Catholic Church. And he's particularly Pope Adrian IV, who was the only Englishman ever to be pope. And it was he who advised Henry II to go into Ireland and straighten things out there. So this is the Muxer. And he is full of Roman Catholic authority and dogma and knows what everything's about. The Gripes, on the other hand, is a Gnostic and rather unclear in his definitions. The Fox and the Grapes is one of the stories that is in here. There are something like 17 different fairy tales that Joyce has combined in this crazy thing of the Muxer and the Gripes. And those of you who will hear them, and those who won't, you know. Jesus says, this is parables for those who have ears to hear. And we'll do what we can. The Muxer and the Gripes. Gents and ladymen, full stoppers and semi-colonials, hybrids and lubbards. Eins within a space and a weary wide space it was, der wohned a Muxer. The onesomeness was all too lonely, arch and sits like broady oval, and a Muxer he would a walking go. My hood, cries Antony Romeo. So one grand summer evening after a great morning and his good supper of gammon and spittish, having flabelled his eyes, pilioled his nostrils, facticinated his ears, and pallumed his throats, he put on his impermeable, seized his impugnable, harped on his crown, and stepped out of his immobile de rure albo, so called because it was chock full of master plasters, and had gorgeously let out gardens, strewn with cascadas, pentecosticas, orthodoxes, and curricones, and set off from Ludstown a spasso, to see how badness was badness in the weirdest of all pensible ways. As he set off with his father's sword, his lancia spezzata he was girded on, and with that between his legs and his tarquils, our once and only brag spear, he clanked to my clinking from V toes to three top every inch of an immortal. He had not walked over a pentiad pair of parsecs from his asylum, when at the turning of the Shinshone Lateran near St. Bowery's without his walls, he came, secunding to the 1/1 of the prophecies, amnis limina permanent, upon the most unconsciously boggy-looking stream he ever locked his eyes with. Out of the collines it took the rise, by daubing itself ninon. It looked little, and it smelt of brown, and it thought in narrows, and it talked so shallow. And as it rin, it dribbled, like any lively pearlidesi. My, my, me and me, little down dream, don't I love thee? And I declare, what was there on the yonder bank of the stream that would be a river, parched on a limb of the olum, bolt downright, but the gripes? And no doubt he was fit to be dried, for why had he not been having the juice of his times? His pips had been neatly all drowned on him, his palps were charging odors every older minute. He was quickly forgetting the dresser's disdain on the fly leaf of his fronds, and he was quietly forgiving the bailiff's distrain onto the bulk side of his cul de pompe. In all his specious heavings, as believed by Optimus Maximus, the Muxer had never seen his Dubville brooder on low so nigh to a pickle. So the two get into a big argument here, and an awful lot of theological material is incorporated in all this, until over on page 156, top of 157, and they viterberated each other with the wildest ever wielded since Tariestinus lashed Pisisfaltium. Unicorn, ungulant, uvuloid, whiskey beach, and Bollyfolly answered volleyball. Now these are the two sons of the house arguing with each other. One way or another, they incorporate all these different conflicts of history. And their little sister, Isolt, has been trying to attract their attention. This is unrequited love, if it ever existed. A sister trying to get in on the game of her brothers. You possibly know something about this. Nuvoletta, in her light dress, spun of Sistine shimmers, was looking down on them, leaning over the banisters and listening all she childishly could. how she was brightened when Schuldrops in his Glaubring hochskied his Welkenstück, and how she was overclused when Niesnobs on his Zwivel was make-acting such a pulse of himself. She was alone. All her newbeat companions were sleeping with the squirrels. Their miver, Mrs. Moonen, was off in the first quarter scrubbing the back steps of number 28. Fover, that scanned, he was up in Norwood's hooker parlor eating oceans of Voking's blemish. Novoletta listened as she reflected herself, though the heavenly one with his constellatria and his emanations stood between. And she tried all to make the Muxa look up at her, but he was far too adaptiously far-seeing. And to make the gripes hear how coy she could be, though he was much too systematically auricular about his ends to heed her. But it was all Miles vapor moist. Not even her faint reflection, Nuvolucia, could they toke their gnoses off. For their minds with intrepid fate and bungless curiosity were conclaved with Heliogabalus and Commodus and Enobarbarus and whatever the cordial Dickens they did, as their damp brauch of papiers and buchstab said, as if that was their spiration, as if theirs could diuperate her queendom, as if she would be third purty to search on search proceedings. She tried all the winsome, wonesome ways her fall winds had taught her. She tossed her sfumastellaceous hair like La Princesse de la Petite Bretagne, and she rounded her minion's arms like Mrs. Cornwallis West, and she smiled over herself like the beauty of the image of the pose of the daughter of the Queen of the Emperor of Ireland, and she sighed after herself as were she born to bride with Tristis, Tristior, Tristissibus, but sweet Madonine, she might fair as well have carried her daisies worth to Florida. For the Muxa, a dogmat aconite, was not a moost, and the Gripes, a doubly boozed Catholic, was pinefully oblivescent. I see, she sighed, there are men. I'm going to skip the next page. Then Nuvoletta reflected for the last time in her little long life, and she made up all her myriads of drifting minds in one. She canceled all her engorgements. She climbed over the banner stars. She gave a childy, cloudy cry, Nue, Nue. A light dress fluttered, she was gone. And into the river that had been a stream, for a thousand of tears had gone on her and come on her, and she was stout and stuck on dancing, and her muddied name was Mrs. Liffey, there fell a tear, a single tear, the loveliest of all tears. I mean for those Cry Love Fables fans who are keen on the pretty, pretty common face sort of thing you meet by Hope Harrods. For it was a leap tear, but the river tripped on her by and by, lapping as though her heart was brook. Why, oh why, way, oh way, I so silly to be flowing, but I know canna stay. No applause, please. Bast, the Ramscott Nattlesacker will go round your circulation in the odorsis. Alloboy Major, I'll take your reactions in another place after themes. Nolan Brown, you may now leave the classroom. Joe, Peters, Fox. So this gives a notion of the youngsters and what Joyce does with them. The boys represent all the conflicts of history. And the little daughter, here she is at the cloud in the sky that is overlooking all, and she rains down into the river and starts the whole thing, her own sorrow is what brings all this about. Well, we're on the last stretch now. The key chapter is in part two, chapter three. It's an enormous, long, long chapter. It's what's taking place down in the tavern with all the tavern guests bringing up these stories about HCE and so forth. Part two, chapter three. Before that, we have the children having their play and so forth and so on. Those of you who are interested in the atom bomb will find the explosion of the atom on page 353. Before the explosion, there are two chaps in argument, Taff and Butt. And after the explosion, they're still there in the same argument, except that the one that had blue eyes now is brown eyes. The one that had brown eyes now is blue. at the very end, we're at the Ricorso. The accent shifts over to Anna Livia, the stream. And dawn is coming, and so the dream is being wiped out. The dream is gradually fading away, and she is fading away. And it's a very strong passage. But you're changing it, Kushla. You're changing from me, I can feel. Or is it me is? I'm getting mixed. Brightening up and tightening down. Yes, you're changing, son husband, and you're turning, I can feel you, for a daughter wife from the hills again, Imla Maya. And she is coming, swimming in my hindmost, divil taking on me tail. Just a whisk, brisk, sly, spry, spink, spank, sprint of a thing, there somewhere saltering. Salterella come to her own. I pity her old self I was used to. Now a younger's there. Try not to part. Be happy, dear ones. May I be wrong. For she'll be sweet for you as I was sweet when I came down out of me mother, my great blue bedroom, the air so quiet, scarce a cloud. In peace and silence, I could have stayed up there for always, only if something fails us. First we feel, then we fall. And let her reign now if she likes, gently or strongly as she likes. Anyway, let her reign, for my time has come. I done me best when I was let, thinking always if I go, all goes. 100 cares, a tithe of troubles. And is there one who understands me, one in 1,000 of years of the nights? All me life I have been lived among them, but now they are becoming loathed to me, and I'm loathing their little warm tricks, and loathing their mean cozy turns, and all the greedy gushes out of their small souls, and all the lazy leaks down over their brash bodies. How small it's all. And me letting on to myself always, and lilting on all the time. I thought you were all glittering with the noblest of carriage. You're only a bumpkin. I thought you the great in all things, in guilt and in glory. You're but a puny. Home. My people were not of their sort, out beyond there so far as I can. For all the bold and bad and bleary they are blamed, the sea hags. No, not for all their wild dances and all their wild din. I can see myself among them, Alan Juvia Pulchra belled. How she was handsome, the wild Amazia, when she would seize to my other breast. And what is she weird, haughty Niluna, that she will snatch from my ownest hair? For 'tis they are the stormies. Ho hang, hang ho, and the clash of our cries till we spring to be free. Or of old, they says, never heed of your name. But I'm loathing them that's here, and all I loathe, lonely in me loneliness, for all their faults. I'm passing out. Oh, bitter ending. I'll slip away before they're up. They'll never see, nor know, nor miss me. And old, it's sad, and old, it's sad, and weary, I go back to you, my cold father, my cold, mad father, my cold, mad, fiery father, till the near sight of the mere size of him, the moils and moils of it, moan and owning, makes me salt, silt, sea sip, and I rush my only into your arms. I see them rising. Save me from those terrible prongs. Two more, one, two Mormons more. So, Ave Laval. My leaves have drifted from me, all, but one clings still. I'll bear it on me to remind me of Lith. So soft this morning, Oz. Yes. Carry me along, Taddy, like you done through the toy fair. If I seen him bearing down on me now, under white spread wings, he'd come from archangels, I think I'd die down over his feet, humbly, dumbly, only to wash up. Yes, Tid, there's where, first, we pass through grass, be hushed the bush to whoosh, a gull, gulls, far calls, coming, far, end here, us then, fin again, but take, bus softly, me memor me, till thou sends thee, lips, the keys to, given, away, a last, alone, a loved, along the river run, past Even Adams, from Swerve of Shore to Bend of Bay, brings us, by commodious speakers of recirculation, back to Howth Castle and environs. The river has gone out to sea. We're back. We can either stay in the sea with Father Ocean and what was to have been the story of Book 4, the fourth work, or come back here and go round the round of reincarnations and rebirth. So that, the great Daedalus flight of Joyce from his labyrinth environment, then breaking from his own ego environment, yielding with compassion to the world in this, that, and the other of its manifestations, finally identifying himself with the ground, the great common ground that shows itself through all the forms of our lives. He speaks for them in this work.
Locked in.